Hi, kitty cats. I am Amethysta Herrick, your hostess for Gender Identity Weekly, a weekly discussion about identity and gender from the contributors and guests of the Purple Paw Publications website, Gender Identity Today. This content is brought to you by subscribers of Gender Identity Today. If you are already a subscriber, I just want to thank you for your ongoing support, because subscribers not only receive new content directly to their inboxes as soon as it publishes, which is already pretty amazing, but are also able to interact with every contributor directly, including me. And I guess I'm still trying to figure out whether that's really a benefit. But if you would like to support shows just like this one, as well as other podcasts, videos, and written articles by our contributors, please consider subscribing using the links that you're going to find in the show notes. Today, I am very honored to be speaking with Krista Song. Hi, Krista.
Hello.
Krista is, I've just got a whole list of things here. Speech-language pathologist, an artist and vocalist, an educator, a community organizer, you were telling me before, some political activism. Krista is also the board co-chair for an organization called CORDS, and we're going to talk about this, that is the Queer-Oriented Radical Days of Summer, and then also a member of the Transcend Community Chorus that's based in New York City. Holy cats, Krista, how do you find any time to do anything else?
Honestly, you should see my to-do list and my calendar, and you'd say, what are you doing? Take a break, and I agree.
I think that's sort of common, I suppose, for some of us. But I want to start like way back at the beginning. You mentioned to me you are also a pianist, although you haven't done a ton of playing piano recently. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious. I mean, you're now working with CORDS. You are part of a community chorus, Transcend Community Chorus, a vocalist yourself, and a speech language pathologist. And that has to have some foundation somewhere. What originally interested you in the idea of voice and speech?
I think I've always thought about language a lot, and that naturally means that you think about speech and your voice, which produce whatever you're saying. I am multilingual, but my first language was Cantonese before I learned English. Oh. Yeah, okay. So I think even at a young age, I've always thought about how words like kind of formed in my mouth, how they were shaped. I started piano at a young age, so that was like my introduction to music in the beginning. I am the stereotype of playing piano from a young age. I am East Asian. I just realized nobody can see me right now. So, and from there, I started singing along to the piano. And I think that's where I started to kind of think about my voice and how I enjoyed singing, how it felt for me. I studied some voice when I was like a teen, and like started singing in many different languages. And honestly, whenever I sung in a different language where I didn't know the words, I found myself enjoying singing more because I didn't have to like ascribe necessarily, value to it or like value to what I was saying.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I think with that in combination with my interests in language, speech and voice became just a part of what I was interested in. But I actually didn't decide to specialize until I was within the field, I'd say. And nowadays I actually work mostly with swallowing disorders and cognitive communication disorders, which I do love, but speech and voice has always been another part of this, another part of technically what speech language pathologists do. And I've, you know, had the chance to get back into using my voice in a semi-professional context occasionally, and that's been really fun to do.
I would imagine the speech language pathologist, forgive me, I don't know all the intricacies of it. That is a master's degree, I believe.
It is a master's degree. That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. And you were saying before that, that part of your background is in psychology.
Yeah. So when I was an undergraduate, I had a double major in music and psychology.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. You had mentioned, and forgive me if I messed this up, did you say it was a cognitive, there was a cognitive
Cognitive disorder? Communication disorders.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. You were going to leave me hanging. I'm glad you'd leave me hanging for like 20 seconds. But
sorry.
Go ahead. Do you want to roll it back? Cognitive? No?
Cognitive communication disorders.
Okay. Is that how you put together both the... you know, both sides of your undergraduate education?
I feel like with music and psychology, my choices for doing that the reason I decided to do a music and psychology double major was because I wanted to keep music part of what I did. Sure. But I knew that psychology was something that had more like, it was interesting to me, right? Because like, I like thinking about thinking, I like brains, I liked social psychology a lot when I was studying. I think a lot of those things that I learned in psychology have a lot of application to a number of fields, including like the field of social work, including the field of speech language pathology. It can really, like psychology, like if you were to get a clinical degree in psychology, you can work as a psychologist. So that was kind of where I was hoping to go with that degree, or even what I initially was teaching. And that even taught me about group dynamics, how to manage a classroom in a lot of ways.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I kind of think of myself as like a person who takes things I learn and applies them to like people I'm working with. So I'm an applied scientist, if you will.
Actually, I quite love that because I don't know that there's a lot of value to learning something and then just going, yeah, whatever, you know, I'm going to be dogmatic about this. You know, if you can't have some sort of application, particularly, you know, that evolves. Mm-hmm. I mean, you and I sort of talked a little bit about this earlier, but, you know, and maybe we don't need to go back to the political rant that we were going through.
But we can record that. Yeah.
I want to, so I had forgotten you had, that you did a music degree as well. Mm-hmm. Did you specialize in piano or voice? Or did you what did you specialize in? Sorry.
So actually the music degree at my school did not require any specialization. Okay. So if I were to kind of talk about what I did while I was in the music program, so I went to Amherst College. It's a fairly small music program, I'd say. And I mean, shout out to the Amherst College music program. Woohoo. Yeah. I think I did a lot of like learning about music history, learned about the basics of like music, composition, music theory. But a lot of what I did like was perform in the choirs. So I sang in all of the choirs that I was allowed to based on my gender presentation. Now what's nice is that they no longer require you to be of a specific gender, I believe. They just call it club, chorus, and choir for the former Glee Club, Women's Chorus, and Concert Choir.
I see.
Yeah.
That's kind of neat.
It is neat. Yeah.
And has played into, I mean, what you're doing now with the Transcend Community Chorus as well.
Yeah, for sure. And
just throw a little bit about that? Because I was looking at the website and it looks, I mean, fascinating. Just,
yeah.
I'm going to stop talking. Tell me.
Transcend Community Chorus is a chorus that I joined actually when I moved back to New York a few years ago. And at that time, it was like a 10-person choir led by Dr. Felix Graham. He has created this space for trans and gender nonconforming singers. It is an open space to all gender nonconforming voices, so you don't even necessarily need to be of transgender identity to join. But anywhere where you feel like your voice has been, or anybody who feels like their voice has been excluded in some way.
I see.
And it's grown in size. So now it's about I want to say 20 to 25 person choir.
Shoot.
Mm-hmm. So it's bigger now, and we have a lot of voices, a lot of people who have returned because they love the space and they love the community that we are. I'm also on like one of the organizing committees, like the member organizing. It's actually the Transcend Member Elective Committee. So you can elect to help kind of plan out social events or plan out like meetings for us to help guide how we want the community chorus to look like for us, and how it can better support us, how we can access it better and more easily.
I think that's awesome. I appreciate the idea of that. She said somebody, I like the way you put it. I mean, it is a community chorus, and you said it's for anybody who feels they don't have a voice. I think is how you put it. That was a great quote, how you said, because it's a chorus that you go and join because you feel that you don't have a voice. Or
you feel like you don't fit into traditional choir. Like if you have a voice that doesn't necessarily conform to the expectations of what that SATB kind of format is, it's really hard, because then like your voice isn't necessarily supported by the director because it doesn't sit the way that it, and I put this in quotation marks, should, the way it should. Yeah.
Right. That's beautiful, because that kind of led into a question that I had written down, but I wasn't sure how we'd back into it, because anybody I've met who has a music background, because I didn't learn music theory until literally, I don't know.
It's fake.
Four years ago, or it's what?
It's fake.
Well, now I'll tell. See, the thing is, though, like, you know, I would see chords and say it was like such and be diminished or something. I'd be like, that's not even real. Like, what the hell is that supposed to mean? That's not even real.
It means that some cis white guy wrote it down on a sheet at some point and was just like, that's what this chord is. And you're like, but why? Like, why can't it just be? No,
I mean it's a great question. The thing is, like, so I'll tell you when I learned any music theory at all, because I'm nowhere near an expert. Okay, like I was surprised I pulled out a diminished whatever, but
pretty good.
But when I have always sat down and written to write a song, always, like I've done a ton of them. But when I have written a song, I've always thought, well, how the hell do you even figure out? Would you use a seventh here? Do you use a minor? What do you use here? Why would it sound good? And I never knew what to try. And then I learned some, the diatonic chords in a in a scale. And I went, that's really not that hard. And then I felt like an idiot, because I do that a lot in my life. But my question was going to be, boy, that was a long, long walk just to get to one crummy question. You talked about, you know, things, the chorus, the way it should be. And, and you know, there's much more interest in inclusivity, I think I want to call it, than doing it as it should. So how do you balance that? I mean, with the background both in with a background in music, but also with the psychology, is that some of the way that you balance that the artistic with, you know, the dry cis hat white guy technical stuff?
I think I'm going to need you to ask that question again, because I didn't understand.
I know. But it was like 18. It took like 20 minutes just to get the one question out.
Hit me with it again. And this time I'm really listening.
I'm still honing my craft. That's what it is. You know,
that's wonderful. I love that.
No, I have no problem. So I guess the question is just, you have this technical background, but you mentioned the importance of the art. You know, if you don't fit into the SATB, what do you do? You know, so do you want to, you know what? I forget what all the SATs was. Soprano, alto,
tenor bass. Bass.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was going to say baritone, but that's not the same, right?
That is a thing, though. So if you split it out, it's actually, if you split it out into three parts per each gender. Oh, it's soprano, mezzo-soprano, alto, then tenor, baritone, bass. So upper voices, lower voices. In our choir, we tend to just phrase it as that, and we number the parts 1, 2, 3, 4. One being the highest voice and 4 being the lowest voice.
Okay. This is going to be a dumb question, but I got to know. I mean, there are men who can do soprano voice. I mean, let me rephrase that. Sorry. I'm freaking transgender and I'm putzing this up. There are people assigned male at birth. No, I know.
Yeah.
Assigned male at birth who can do like a soprano voice. Mm-hmm. And then there are people assigned female at first. Assigned female at birth who can do like a bass voice. Like, were those voices in SATB, were they necessarily separated by gender?
In our choir or in...
I guess
or in
classically.
Like general classical choir. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Good question. It really depends on like what kind of choir it is because...
Really?
Little like AMABs, like children, AMAB children, let's say, yes,
right.
they can have this higher voice. They would be called like a boy soprano or any number of different things. I think they were like more traditionally used in, I'm not going to say that because I can't really support that. I don't know what I'm talking about. but I would say that they were like, they sang like solo parts in like church music.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that they were mixed into general choirs. And then people who had lower voices who were AFAB, like they would sing these parts that you would call traditionally like a contratenor part.
Okay.
And hold on, let me just make sure I'm not actually saying the wrong thing, because there's countertenors and there's contraltos.
I can rescind the question too.
No. Okay, so a countertenor is a male singer who can sing as high as a soprano or a mezzo-soprano range.
Okay.
Male singer is what Google says.
Yeah, assigned male at birth.
Assigned male at birth.
Thank you. Thanks, Google.
Thank you for taking all of my information and knowing exactly what I need. And a contralto is somebody who is an AFAB singer who can sing as low as a tenor range.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's... These terms have been used to like describe certain kinds of voices. So there has been language to describe this diversity in voice since, westernized, I should say. In westernized music, they have these words already.
Right.
And I think talking about ranges and talking about like where your voice sits, like that certainly kind of gets into talking about like pitches and talking about hertz ranges. You can get really quickly into this idea that high and low is a binary,
right.
When there's really just so much in between.
Yeah. And so I guess I don't know why I'm pounding on this, because I'm just I know very little about like classical choir.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a book. it's still on my shelf there. I haven't read it. I mean,
that's
I got
like
a lot of books.
Me and all my books on my shelf currently. They're all on my to-read list right now.
Right. So I've got a book actually about... What's the right word for it? Is it choir, chorale, chorus?
Yes.
Or they're all the same? Okay.
Well, I mean, they probably mean different things, but...
Okay. But you know what? Don't pull up Google again, because Google's going to give us some, you know, gender binary claptrap. And I don't want to engage with it. Screw you, Google.
That's right. Stop taking all my information, Google.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. It probably knows where you are right now. Google's tracking you.
It definitely does. I think my phone like has like the find my phone function or whatever on it right now. So
it does.
Yeah, I know.
No, they're watching you. They're watching you. That's a window behind you, isn't it? Because
there's a window right over
there. Sure you don't want to close that curtain? I don't.
It's like one of those drawstringy things that I gotta like go over there and pull. So no, I'm not doing that.
Oh well, then never mind. Yeah, never mind. Let's go back to the thing then. I don't want to play too much more into your your paranoia. So just because you're paranoid, though, doesn't necessarily mean that they're not out to get you.
Wow.
I just want to say that. It's important. Important. So
that's true.
Right now, everybody in the audience is going, God, are they going to move on? Because what the hell?
We've just been stuck. We're just chatting.
Yeah. But so you had actually mentioned, so part of what you were doing, or still do, I guess, with Transcend Community Chorus, mm-hmm. is you had mentioned that there was some community outreach and some, mm-hmm. In general, community stuff. Mm-hmm. And much of the reason you and I were connected, oh, I even forgot to mention that, because I always love to mention Kevin Dorman.
Yes, I love Kevin.
Yeah. And it was Kevin who connected us,
yeah.
in part because I had asked them about, well, community people, you know, people who are more involved in bringing mm-hmm. together community as well, you know, in terms of a voice and like, you know, well, you know, SLP type stuff, speech language pathologist type stuff. Yeah. So, community. You were the board co-chair, first of all, for Chords, and then also community with Transcend. And now I got to imagine, like, community has also always been important in your life.
100%.
What spawned that?
I honestly think that it comes from my own upbringing. I was not necessarily raised just by a nuclear family, this ideal mm-hmm. that's, you know, very Western, very American. Yes. I was raised by what we call a village, right? Like, I was raised by my parents, plus my grandparents, plus all of my mom's friends and her friends' relatives. Like, I have... memories of, you know, going and like being watched by my aunt's father and like my auntie, you know, how aunties aren't necessarily related by blood. I had so many aunties growing up. So that to me really highlighted how important it is to have a community and how important it is to have people who will support you. And I've thought about this recently in like the context of child rearing, like, it's impossible to raise an entire human with just two people. It's just not possible. Yeah. And so I feel like with that kind of perspective and plus just like always valuing community, always finding ways that I've always wanted to connect with people. Like, I've always wanted connection. I've always really valued it. And I also derive a lot of healing from my communities as well.
Sure.
And I think in the broader context, and this is going to get political again, but the broader context of like late stage capitalism and the fact that we are currently dying under the American empire, for me at least, I think... with all of that in context, like, who can we look to for support? We're not necessarily going to be able to find it from the government just based on how things have gone. So who can we right. depend on but our community?
You know, I'm going to admit to almost like a sense of jealousy as you were telling me. Because I grew up, I mean, as you were telling me about your childhood, you said, you know, you had all of this community around you. And mm-hmm. I had a very... opposite kind of experience. So much of my, you know, my parents were very, God, insular? Is that the word? I don't know. But I didn't have a lot of community around me. And like my father's family was states away and my mother's mm. family was estranged. And mm-hmm. you said, yo, it takes more, you know, more than two people to, you know, to create a healthy human. I forget how you said that. I don't know if it was
to raise a whole human, a whole ass human.
Yeah. Right. Cause you don't want just a half ass.
No.
If you're going to have an ass, get a whole ass human.
Get a whole ass human. That's correct.
Yeah. But I didn't get that experience. Yeah. And I look now. So my point was going to be, cause your experience was you had a lot of community and you said, boy, this is great. And I felt like I had very little. And now I mean, honestly, it's only been a couple of years that I'm sort of like, gosh, there are a lot of people out here.
Yeah.
A lot of people who can support me or whom I can support. Or, and I guess, you know, because I had written down this question and I'm looking at this going, ooh, wow, that said a whole lot about me. Is community critical for a healthy childhood? I read it back and I went, oh, shit, that really.
Oof. Got to bring that one to my therapist later.
I know. The thing is, I just dropped it out there. And as you were talking, I looked at it and went, well, that hit me. Going to need a lot more therapists.
Yeah. So. And I mean, I definitely believe that a community is critical for a healthy childhood. And I think that's kind of shown in the fact that a lot of queer kids, like, they're not just seeking, like, adult community. They're seeking community from each other.
Yeah.
And so, like, Chords is a place where they can find that queer community and build it and start building it now. Because what is a queer community but feeling different and feeling maybe that your community that you have necessarily, like, with your family, like, that's not the only community you have. That's not the only family you have.
Right.
Right. And so if we can give these youth a place and an opportunity to build that community and build not just community amongst themselves, but see queer adults and see that they have a future and see that they are part of a larger community and we're doing this for them. And when they get to our place, they might also want to do exactly what we're doing and give that community back to the youth, to queer youth.
Yeah. I want to throw, like, a counterpoint,
because, ooh, okay.
And this is not just to be, you know, contentious, but this, early on, I mean, maybe it's a little bit, but early on in when I started thinking about, you know, the work that I've done anyway, mm-hmm. early on, because I would meet people, especially in the transgender community, and this is not to diminish any of the people that I'm going to describe here. I felt that when I met people, you're already smiling. You're like, no, it's gonna
diminish. No, I'm so interested to hear what this question is now.
So, well, there were some people I met, and I said, well, you know, tell me about yourself. And they listed like four or five words. Like, I can remember, you know, well, I'm like, I'm gonna struggle here. I am a demisexual, sapphic. It was like a long laundry list of here are all the labels that I have adopted. And again, I don't want to diminish, you know, because there's sort of a shortcut way. I mean, it can be a good shortcut to say, well, this is in general who I am. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I guess I wonder, as we establish community, how much do we integrate and how much do we segregate ourselves by using some of these words? I mean, because community, you originally said family, and now we're talking about the LGBT, the queer community.
Yeah.
Why are the two different, I guess?
How are they different? Or are the two different?
Mm-hmm. Why are they different? Why do they have to be different?
They aren't. That's definitely what I'm saying. Like, I'm saying that, like, good. Queer family is queer community. Like, we, you know, when you hear, I actually wrote this in an Instagram caption once, and my mother became very upset at me. But I called my friends my chosen family. And my mom was just like, what does this mean? English is not her first language. She doesn't necessarily understand what the context of that was. And I had to explain to her. I was just like, these are my friends. These are the people that I choose to also have as my family. Like, family is additive. Relationships are additive. I think that being in the queer community, and I'm so fortunate. I should, like, really be highlighting how fortunate I am to have, like, a relationship with my family. I used to really dislike having relationships. So sorry, Mom and Dad. I love you very much. But I used to, like, really struggle with that relationship.
They aren't listening. They're not listening. It's cool. You can dump on anybody here, because no.
Our relationship was, like, not necessarily, like, I always felt obligated to them in a way that wasn't positive. Sure. But as I got older, I, like, realized how much that obligation kind of goes back to this idea of like, when you give something back. The idea of gift economies. If you haven't read Braiding Sweetgrass, I truly recommend it. It's a very good book. I can't remember the name of the author right now, but Braiding Sweetgrass, it's kind of about indigenous knowledge, and about the ways that we should kind of be reframing our relationship to the world, and particularly the earth. So it kind of goes back to thinking, I forgot, I've lost my train of thought.
Well, I mean, it was chosen family yeah. family versus, you know, inherited family.
Yes. And like, you have no obligation necessarily to your inherited family if they hurt you or if they break your boundaries. Like, you have no obligation to somebody that you're related to by blood just because they birthed you and just because they clothed you and all those things. You are not beholden to them. That was their responsibility to you. They didn't owe you. You don't owe them anything.
I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. I think you'll find many parents do not, but
it's true.
I'm trying to figure out how I want to put this. It's like there's sort of a transactional.
Yeah. And there is an inherent adultism to raising children. There is this idea that your children belong to you. And that is never the case. Your children grow up to be their own people and their own beings with their own opinions. And yeah, parents might not like that, but that is how it is. And it really is up to parents to make sure that you maintain a positive relationship with your child. They want to be there. I don't think there's any child who wants their parents to not love them. I think that's all they want. Like, that's in a lot of ways. And I'm speaking very generally here, obviously, and I probably shouldn't because every family's different. Everybody is different.
True. But I agree with you. I think that there was a line. I can't even believe I'm going to bring this up. But do you remember that movie with Brandon Lee, The Crow? Do you remember that one?
No, I don't know if I've seen that.
All right. It was Brandon Lee, and it would have come out early 1990s, probably 93, 94, because I know I saw it.
I would have been 2 when it came out.
I was in graduate school. Krista.
I'm a baby.
Just kidding. I always appreciate those sort of things. So when somebody goes, "Oh my God, I wasn't even born," and I'm like, "Thank you for making me feel like an old lady. I appreciate."
You have more wisdom, is all. Tell me.
All right. So anyway, in the movie, the sheriff. Killing me. In the movie, I'm going to try to get past this as quickly as possible. There's there's one line, and I'm probably going to murder it because it wasn't actually in the graphic novel or, you know, the comic books by James O'Barr. Anyway, in it, the line goes, I believe it was, "Mother is the word for God in the lips and hearts of all children." And I remember, my mother's not listening to this. I can virtually guarantee it. But she, you know, I remember hearing that and I thought, you know, that's so true. We want our parents to love us, to care for us. And I don't want to go all maudlin on us on the whole thing. I mean, I tend to do it anyway. But like, one of the things that I wrote about recently was how my community seemed so not supportive, and how it's affected me now, you know, into my 50s. And it's, you know, I think your point that children want their parents to care about them. Yeah. I think it's completely true. You know, I don't think there's anything worse than having a parent reject you, because I at least assume parents want to care about their kids. Otherwise, why'd you have kids? You know,
there are lots and lots of bad reasons to have children.
Yeah.
Period. That's it. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of going to follow up, and then I went,
No, yeah, there's nothing else to say. It's like,
yeah,
there are definitely bad reasons to have children.
Right.
And plenty of good reasons to have children, too, of course.
Yeah. To pull this around a little bit, because I realize now we really did go into the... People will be skipping forward. There's... Because the reason I brought up the labels at the beginning, I've heard people in the queer community say, look, I kind of want to stay aloof. I kind of want to be separate. You know, I don't want to be part of I'm going to put this in quotes. Nobody can see my air quotes. But I don't want to be part of normal community. With your focus on community, what do you think about that? Do you get that at all? Is there...
No, I don't feel like that's true at all. I think that I have, like, heard this idea that, like, excluding straight people from queer spaces, like, that's kind of thing. That's what you mean? Like, okay. So,
I can give you another example.
Yeah.
I mean, that is one. There is, because a lot of the work that I've done, when I've written about gender, I've written that it is a universal human process, and I've never had more vociferous opposition. There we go. Mm-hmm. Everything okay over there? didn't get any more vociferous opposition than from the transgender community, who are like, no, gender is mine. Gender is not does not belong to Ron DeSantis. Gender belongs to me, and don't take it away from me.
I would argue that cis people, cis people, they care a lot about gender.
They do.
They care. Otherwise, they wouldn't so care about much about me. Gender. They have gender reveals. Like, there's so much that cis people do that tells them how not okay they are about gender.
Yeah.
Agreed. So I think that gender is everybody's. I think that everybody has one if they want one too, because some people are also agender and do not have gender. I think that there is some amount of outgroupness that straight people do feel in queer spaces, because what their modus operandi isn't like normative there.
Right.
And I think there is an importance to having queer spaces and like queer and trans only spaces. I think they are places for us to find community and build within that community. Just as it's very important to have spaces that are exclusively for people of color. It's where a lot of multiracial organizing happens. And even within multiracial groups, there should be a space for people who have more specific identities, because people of color is not an identity. Being Black is an identity. Being East Asian is an identity in a lot of ways. So those groups should also have a space to find community and organize together. There's always a place for solidarity too. There are spaces for that. There are spaces that are also not like explicitly like straight passing only, but that is much of spaces, I'd say.
Go to the supermarket.
Go to the supermarket. You're supposed to pass, or else you will be stared at. And if you wear clothes where if you wear clothes that are not of your gender, or like I'm trying to think if if you wear a dress, people will like try and look at your body and check to make sure you have the right parts for it. Yeah, it's not great. I don't really get it, but I do. I know why, but I don't know why.
Yeah. All right. I think we hit upon the. I think we exhausted that one, because it's kind of, we got to the point where it's like, What are you going to do? And I'm not diminishing that. There's so many spaces that like I go, that if I didn't, if I didn't pass as exceptionally as I do, and go ahead and you can tell, you messed up with the age thing. So help me out with the passing.
Girl, you look so good.
Right?
You look so good.
I'm going to have you, we're going to pay you to follow me around.
Oh, girl, look at you with your hair flip. Yes, love that.
Awesome. What the hell was that? Wait, we overused that one.
Okay.
My gosh. Shameless plug. So let's move. So it's not really, what are you going to do? But, I'm not sure how you solve that. And I wish we could, because there's so much where it's like, hey, wait a minute, you're wearing a dress. I mean, even like there are women who don't have, say, had bilateral mastectomies, go to the market in a dress, and people go, oh, what's wrong with her?
And the fact of the matter is that like gender presentation and like gender diversity absolutely has an impact on cis people too. Like,
oh my gosh, yes.
I shouldn't say they. I don't understand how it's possible for them to look at somebody and say like that person is not femme enough when they're completely cis, or like to judge cis people as like femininity is being able to carry a child and having a uterus and all this kind of thing. And I'm just like, you're excluding cis people when you say that. Like,
But those movements are not about inclusivity. I mean, I think we just, because maybe we can just, leave it at that. Just know we only want a certain group of people in our world. The rest of you can get in a rocket. Maybe Elon Musk will send you off to Mars in his little Tesla, and you can sit there with a stupid driver's wheel and all that. So I like to smack that guy in the back of the head. I almost hit myself. Did you see that? That would have been a good... I would not edit that out.
Effect. Yeah, good sound effect.
Wouldn't that have been great? That was my gene, folks, who had no idea. Who had any idea? So they're not looking... Anyway, these people are not looking to have a single humanity. They're looking to have a single homogeneous humanity that passes, their tests, not, All right, now we really did. Because I want to talk about chords. We were going to talk... Half the reason we were going to talk was... We're 45 minutes in and I only just got to it. I'm sorry. That's all on me.
It's not on you.
It is, because I end up going off on these tangents and then, the guest is like, oh.
I'm similarly undisciplined in topic maintenance, so don't worry.
Wow. I really, can I borrow that? Undisciplined in topic maintenance is phenomenal. Yeah. Holy cats. I'm using that. All right, chords. So this is the queer-oriented radical days of summer, and I on the website, which by the way there will be there will be links to both to Chords and Transcend in the show notes. Oh, and incidentally, I took a note on braiding sweetgrass. I'm gonna stick that into the show notes. I meant to tell you that and I didn't, but
please do. Yeah.
So Chords is targeted towards Southern youth. I noticed. I went to graduate school in Northeast Georgia.
Ooh.
So I was 20, whatever. I was 20 something. You were 2. I just wanted to point that out again.
I was
folks.
A baby.
But what was interesting was that when I got to graduate school, I actually really leaned into being both pansexual and transgender. I didn't have either of those words because those are kind of newer words.
Yeah.
But I really leaned into that in, the early to late 90s when I was in Georgia. And it's funny because I thought it was okay. Like, it seemed like the acceptance was not bad. I mean, people were kind of like, wow, that's a strange person. What the hell? But it was kind of like, well, I don't know. Oh, I heard she's from California. And everybody would go, oh.
Oh. Oh my God.
Totally get it. And by the way, may I point out, you look great in that skirt. that there's from California, and you look great in that skirt too. That's cool. Don't worry. So there's a reason why you want to target this towards Southern youth.
So,
what is it?
I think you were actually, funnily enough, the way that I was first introduced to this camp was through Kevin Dorman. So Kevin Dorman used to be on the board of Chords as well. And I joined initially as a volunteer, but stayed on because I realized that camp is magic. And so Kevin is based in North Carolina, and the camp is based in North Carolina. So it has also been a learning experience for me, having never lived in the South. I've only really scraped the surface. I don't have the knowledge of living in the South. But I have appreciated the learning that I've gotten, and I've also come to really value the space as a Southern youth-facing space. I would say that youth in the South are facing some of the most stringent anti-transgender laws. There's been a lot of movement in local legislature to basically erase their existence, erase the existence of gender diversity. And actually, I think recently one of my board members was telling me about working at UT Austin and the fact that all of their things that are around diversity, equity, and inclusion have disappeared based on a recent state law that was passed.
Really?
And now things like the Women and Gender Center, I think, have had to shut down or rename themselves in order to keep operating, or like shut down certain portions of their operating because they were too DEI focused.
And this is a UT Austin, you said? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the flagship universities in Texas, and they're... I admit, I'm speechless. It doesn't happen often, Krista. But I mean, really?
Yes, really. Yeah. And I can reach out to my co-board member and ask her about it for more specifics if you'd like it for the show notes.
Yeah.
But it's wild. It is completely wild the way that things are changing. And so frequently the rhetoric when it comes to, you know, queer organizing and organizing in the United States specifically, it's very almost hostile towards the South because their votes, their presidential votes all go to the red candidate, right? Red team, blue team. Like that is the extent of what most people think of when it comes to politics. They don't think about the lived experience, the people who live there, the significant Black community that lives in the South, the significant cultural like touchstone of being Southern and Black. Like these are all different things that you are saying aren't worth trying for when you say that there's nothing in the South for queer kids or queer people. Like just leave, just move. It's not right. Youth do not have the choice to move. Many people, adults, Southern adults, queer adults, Southern queer adults do not have the choice to pick up and move.
True.
Poverty is a thing. Being able to mobility is a thing. Disability is a thing. All of these things mean that we should be investing time and effort into organizing in the South.
That's an amazing point. And I will tell you, I think I was in the former category that there's no use even thinking about it. But that was a conversion moment right there. That was truly amazing. I just want to point that out. I mean, thank you for that.
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, that's a depressing, those are depressing things that you mentioned. So tell me about the magic that occurs at these. Sorry, I use magic a lot,
I mean, no, I agree with sort of,
what transformations, what lights, what happens at these camps?
I'll be honest, I've never been in person to one of these camps because the year that I started volunteering, we went virtual. But I've had personal experience being at camp and knowing the wild transition as a youth it was for me, from being a, like, a person who ostensibly, like, was under the thumb of my parents or whatever, but then, like, coming to a place where there were other people like me. And for me, it was nerds, by the way. I went to a nerd camp where we literally took, like, courses during the day, and, like, with other people, like, other kids who were smart and tested, passed a certain test. It was amazing. It was so fun for me. But I think that's essentially what the camp is for our campers too, because the year that I was virtual, we were still able to create this community. This was 2020 when we're all looking for that connection among the campers. That looks like them discovering something new about themselves because somebody shared about their identity with them. It's being able to put together something that's incredible. So at Chords, the campers are put into bands, and the bands co-write and then perform the song at the end of camp at their showcase.
Cool. Yeah.
It's this experience where they basically have to contend with each other as bandmates and understand each other. They have to make art together. And the other portions of it, we also have workshops throughout the time that they're there about different topics that don't necessarily even need to be music related. Some topics include things like queer history, things like a drag night, things like, queer science even. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. Sometimes this year we've had like volunteers think about things like, a foraging activity, in nature, things like, Ask an Elder, where they just go around and ask all of the queer counselors, like, tell me about this specific thing, about yourself. And they love it. So being able to interact with queer elders, and also being able to create that community amongst, youth that are their age, that have, that see them, that understand them, that let them craft their identity. At camp, we have them make name tags, new name tags every day, and new pronouns every day. So if you want to go through camp playing with your pronouns, playing with your name, and playing with your identity, you're allowed to. You can decide that your pronouns today are he, she. Great. Maybe next day your pronouns are zzer. Great. We're so excited that you're playing, that they get the opportunity to be in that space where other kids understand them, have gone through something similar even, or just they understand what it's like to be othered in some ways and to not necessarily fit in.
Right. I got to figure, I mean, there are two things that I would think. First of all, I got to imagine these are experiences that help these kids feel that they're living. I don't know a better way to say that. Like, this has got to be just like a spark that gives them the reason to keep going until next year. I mean, so first of all, good on you for that. Thank you.
I'm trying.
Because this kind of stuff, it didn't exist when I was a kid. And I was in Southern California, right?
Yeah.
So, the other thing that I would imagine that the parents of these children are probably pretty accepting.
Yes, they have to be in order to come to camp because they have to have parent consent to come. Yes.
Yeah.
And we,
is there,
we,
no, go ahead. You're probably going to go where I was going to go. So
I was just going to say, we as a camp have been thinking about that, how we should also be supporting their parents. And maybe parents that aren't accepting, but wanting to understand their children more. Unfortunately, we can't work with kids whose parents don't consent. So we have to get to a point where a parent is asking questions and a parent is trying to understand their kid. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know how far around, children have come to be? I mean, you said you went virtual, but before, do you know how far people would travel?
I think I can't remember the specifics, but I do remember people like going on multi-day road trips in order to be around for camp. Yeah. Wow. People driving from like, but like there are families who do that during the summer. Like they will drive across the country with their kids and they'll go to a camp 1 week and like the parents will do something else that week and they'll come back, pick up their kids. So yeah, I think there are a few families that like that, thinking like two or three campers like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I don't know the extent. I do know that we had some people from California join us. Wow. Yeah. People fly in. And I mean, this year we are going to be back to in person, which I'm so, so excited about. But
oh, that is great.
Yeah. We're going to be in person this year. And so, like we said, we've been, interviewing volunteers, and we're going to be starting to open up camper applications starting April 1st. Yeah, I know.
Very soon.
And we have anxious parents just like they cannot wait to get in. And I'm like so excited that they're excited. I'm like hopeful, though, that we're going to get a big diversity in terms of campers and in terms of age, in terms of like what states they're from. But generally we are trying to target Southern youth. So we put most of our promotional energy and like more of our like rollout towards, parents in the South if possible.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. And I don't know if I even mentioned, cause it's 12 to 17, children aged 12 to 17. It's hard for me to say children when you're like 17.
Yeah, I know. I usually say kids or youth, but youth is hard to say.
Youth,
too.
That sounds kind of is. But this sounds like amazing, just amazing work. I'm curious how it could expand to parents who would not normally be very accepting of this. Yeah. And, you know, if they could see the juxtaposition of their youth, there we go, their youth at home, you know, looking drab and dead. And then you put them among people who accept, you know, whatever it is, their queerness, and see them spark into life. I wonder if parents would go, oh, dang, well, now I know. Thank you, Krista, for teaching me, you know.
I mean,
who my child is.
I mean, I'm sure that parents are excited by the changes that they see, and they are invited to the showcase at the end, so they get to see the work that their kid put into whatever art that we created together at camp. So that's the goal. We do want parents to realize how important queer identity is to them. But I think part of our ideas, we're very small right now. During the pandemic, we definitely shrunk in size, our board. So our ability to organize, our capacity to do like all the things we want to do is unfortunately pretty limited. But it doesn't mean that we can't do things like put on camp again. And the hope is that by next year, we'll have a bigger board, more people to be organizing in the name of Cords. Right. And hopefully that means we'll be at more prides, because, you know, like when you want to support your kids' queer identity, but you don't understand them yet, you take them to Pride. Like that is one of the first places you take them. If you find out about a camp there where they could take this energy that's like targeted towards them, like, that's great. The other plan is to try and do some more parent-directed programming during the year. Like there are a lot of things that like LGBTQ centers are already doing, a lot of things that our community without like Cords participating is already doing. Support groups, peer support for youth, all of those things are things that I think Cords is hoping to have some more connections to, and hoping to, you know, give those resources to parents during the year. We'd be able to kind of connect more with others who also care about queer youth.
Sure. Yeah. And so partnerships, so you mentioned partnerships. And then of course, if people want to support Cords directly, I mean, like I said, the cords.org, Q-O-R-D-S, Q-O-R-D-S.org.
/donate.
Erase that, people. Yes. Okay. So people can donate. Mm-hmm. If you want partnerships with this, it just sounds like such great work. There are also going to be two links for following Chords on Facebook and also on Instagram. How else can we help? How else can the community jump into the community at large jump into this and pitch in?
I mean, for Chords, if you are interested in volunteering with us, volunteer applications have closed, but there is potential for us to reopen those in the future. So I would keep up to date with us on Instagram, which is Chords, Q-O-R-D-S underscore camp, C-A-M-P, Chords Camp. And you should be able to follow us on Instagram for any updates. We might be reopening volunteer applications, just depending on how many we get from this round, too.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this work, Krista. It's truly amazing.
Oh, one more thing. Alternatively, if you know any queer parents with queer kids or even just kids who...
There
you questioning go. Or straight, we welcome queer spawn, is what we call it. and if you know any parents who have a queer kid who is 12 to 17, let them know about our camp and that applications will be opening in April 1st.
That's awesome. How can people reach out to you? If they want to learn more about Krista, how do they reach out to you?
You can definitely reach me and follow me on Instagram at mix.singasong, which is MX.SINGASONG.
I love that. That's nice.
My last name Song. So it actually comes from my teaching days when I was miss.singasong. But then I lost access to that Instagram, so I rebranded.
Actually, I like this better.
Yeah, right? Me too.
Meant to ask you right at the beginning and totally did. You have the slash in your name. So CRYS/TA. I've got to visualize it. How did you put that together?
So my name is Krista. And when I was in organizing circles, I was also going by Chris as a form of anonymity in some ways, because sometimes organizing isn't always the safest. But since then, it's kind of stuck as a secondary name for me, because my mother also, when she's calling for me, yelling for me, will also go, Chris. So it's not like unfamiliar to me. So I go by Chris or Krista, in even Cantonese speaking circles where my family is involved. I also go by Tata. So it's not like, it's an unfamiliar separation to me. Yeah. But yeah, either is fine.
I took that guess, but I like the origin stories too. So it's fun. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we've gone on and, we're out of time now, so so I will certainly, I want to thank our audience. I want to thank you, Krista. Thank you so much for your participation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. No, this has been a great conversation. I know it took us a little bit to get connected, and I'm glad that we did. It's great.
Yes.
And you're doing amazing work.
Thank you. So, same to you, honestly. You're doing amazing work, too.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, thanks. I like to brush past that. Sorry. I should be more gracious. Thank you so much, Krista. I appreciate your compliment there, your praise.
So it's hard to accept I am amethyst. I understand. It's hard to accept compliments.
Oh my gosh, yeah. No, it totally is. I'm always, I love to diminish it, because that's, how I was pretty much how I ended up being raised is, I had to diminish myself as much as possible. Before this turns into a therapy session, though, I'll cut that short. And just say, I am Amethysta Herrick. I'm here with Krista Song. We were talking about Chords and also just how music and community plays a part in who we are and who we become and how we can become it. Sure. I don't know.
Love that.
I'm going to let it go. Yeah, it's close enough. Thank you so much, Krista.